Finding Our Own Way, an anthology of supernatural fic by Lipton, read by Baylor, rated PG-13. The stories in this anthology focus on Johar Val and Kat from episode 110, Asylum. More than just a pretty face, Ann Arbor, Michigan, April 25th, 2007. Getting into the dorm was the easiest part of the hunt. All Joe had to do was walk in behind someone else and grab the door before it shut. No special skills required. She thought it was kind of funny that for all of its promises of security with its key cards and its castle-like exterior, anyone off the street could come right in. The bored-looking student at the front desk didn't even look up from his book when she went by. It was 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and the place was freakishly quiet, hardly a person in sight. She walked by a few students arguing in fierce whispers and a chick with glazed-over eyes, and none of them even glanced in her direction. It was a weird change from her last time in a dorm, when everyone had had a nasty look to spare for the freak with all the knives. The trudge up to the fourth floor didn't leave her winded. The halls were completely empty, their only sign of inhabitants a burst of high-pitched laughter and the muffled thump of loud music. She slipped through the hallways unnoticed and unregarded. It was the work of less than a minute to pick the lock of the room she'd chosen and slip inside. The overhead light flickered to life, and Jo took in the narrow room that would be her home for the next few days. White walls and black linoleum didn't do much to make the place very hospitable, but there was a bed, a sink, and a window. She'd stayed in worse places. She put the duffel down on the bed and pulled out her laptop, setting it on the desk and plugging it in. There might not be carpet, but free wireless definitely made up the difference. She scrolled through her notes. The pattern of deaths hadn't been easy to put together. The sad reality of suicides on a college campus, coupled with an administration that was doing its damnedest to cover it all up, had nearly beat her. Too bad for them, research was one of the parts of the job that she was the best at, and no one could erase the fact that all of the suicides in the past 6 months had taken place at East Quad. Like most hunters, she didn't believe in coincidence. Jo yawned and scrubbed at her eyes. She hadn't been sleeping so well the past few weeks. She hoped that getting away from Duluth and back on the job would lay that particular problem to rest. She never had cause to believe it before, but it really was the downtime that'd kill you. She double-checked the hack she'd done at housing to cover her illicit stay and shut everything down. It would be best to try and get some shut-eye before she took a look around. Sleeping on a mattress was 100 times better than the bench seat in her truck. She lay there and let the bass beat pulsing down the hall pound all of the thoughts and memories out of her head. She fell asleep with the comfort of a knife under her pillow and lines of salt around window and door. The middle of the night was about 1,000 times busier than the middle of the day. Jo spent most of the time dodging around noisy groups of co-eds. No one gave her a second look as she wandered around the floors, her daddy's knife in her pocket and an EMF meter disguised as an iPod, an Ash original, plugged in her ears. She strolled by students in various states, some studying, others joking around, and one memorable group that was banging on a couple bongo drums as they passed around a joint. She stepped around them right before a short-haired girl in her PJs banged out of a room and sternly told them off for keeping her up. Her path led inexorably from the eaves to the basement. It was a stark change from the other rambling floors. Threadbare carpet and frenetically decorated doors were replaced by a strange series of dim, echoing tunnels. The labyrinth was punctuated by laundry rooms, stairwells, and a dirty-looking hole of a commissary that belched out fumes of rancid frying oil. She inevitably came to the one long hallway that stretched to the dorm's computer lab. It was dark at that time of night, all of the lights stripping the ceiling dark and silent. She had made it nearly halfway to the lab's door, brightly lit outline, when the EMF reader started screaming. Her eyes whipped around the narrow space, her heart picked up speed, and her muscles tensed. The meter squealed higher, and she switched it off. A cold breeze sifted through the straggling hairs that had escaped from her hasty ponytail. She saw it then, a darker smear among the shadows on the wall. She looked closer, and the smear resolved itself into a door. The paint around the door seams was rough and cracked, as if it had been painted over and had only recently been reopened. She grabbed the handle and pulled. It opened silently, cold, musty air gusting out into the corridor. She clicked on the flashlight stowed in her jacket pocket and scanned the pitch-black hole. It was deeper than she would have thought, but narrow, the beam of light bouncing off of close side walls, but streaming into emptiness straight ahead. It definitely wasn't a janitor's closet. She stepped inside, careful to block the door open before letting it slide closed behind her. The darkness was claustrophobic, but she'd experienced worse. Nothing would ever be as horrifying as that psychopath's tunnels in Philadelphia, or the box he'd entombed her in. This one was cold and damp. Her flashlight's beam skittered from crumbling brick walls to exposed piping inches above her head. She walked carefully over the uneven concrete floor. Water dripped haphazardly, the echo sounding from everywhere and nowhere. The tunnel took a sharp right. Jo nearly tripped over a box of tools, used but modern, that lay abandoned near a still puddle. She crouched down and peered inside. They were well kept, too well maintained to belong to the kind of person who would absentmindedly leave them behind. The air shifted and she stilled, all of her senses leaping to sharpness. She held her breath and listened. There was something else in the tunnel with her. She stood up and edged back down the tunnel. She shoved the flashlight back in her pocket and peered carefully around the corner. Enough light seeped in around the distant door to highlight a dark figure standing before it. There was a muffled curse, and a flashlight with a dim yellow beam was switched on. Jo stepped out from around the corner, anger warring with fear in her chest. "Shit!" a very female voice squawked, and before Jo knew it, she was being pelted with salt. Jo pulled out her own flashlight. "What the fuck?" she demanded as she shook salt out of her hair. Great, some of it had fallen down the front of her shirt. That'd be a bitch and a half until she had a chance to take off her bra. "You're not a ghost," the girl gasped. "Not really." The sass in Joe's voice would have gotten her a smack upside the head from her mom, but getting a face full of rock salt justified some snark. "What are you doing down here?" "I'm..." The girl pursed her mouth. "Wait, what am I doing down here? What are you doing down here?" "Hunting ghosts." If she sounded a little defensive, it was well earned. She'd met more than one crotchety old hunter who'd asked her the same question in nearly the same tone of voice. The girl unconsciously brushed a heavy lock of blonde hair out of her face. "So did you have a crappy guidance counselor, too?" "What?" Jo asked peevishly. Before the girl could reply, Jo cocked her head and held up her hand. There was a sound like whispering voices at the edge of her hearing. "Do you hear that?" The girl nodded in complete silence. Cold fingers swept across Joe's neck. She shivered and slashed out with her daddy's knife in the same instant. She felt something recoil at the cold iron, but the tension in the tunnel continued to grow. "You still have some salt?" Joe asked and held out her hand. The girl immediately dropped a mound of coarse granules into her hand and reached into her pocket for more. Joe scanned the tunnel behind her with her flashlight. She couldn't see anything, but she knew that something was there. "We have to get out of here. Now." The door was still wedged open, now with an actual doorstop, which Jo kicked away once they were out and slammed the door behind her. She didn't bother stopping, but pushed the girl down the hallway with her, knife in one hand, salt in the other. Her heart rate only started to even out when they emerged in a still-lit laundry room. She leaned against the wall and took a couple of deep breaths to the accompaniment of a thumping dryer. The girl released a shaky little laugh. Jo opened her eyes and saw that she had collapsed in a chair a couple of feet away. She was pale, but didn't seem nearly as freaked out as Jo had expected. "Well, that was fun." She met Joe's eyes, and they shared a look that was equal parts hysteria and euphoria. "My name's Kat, by the way." One quick palm of a student ID the next day, and Jo had all the grub she could eat. The south calf was nearly full up, which didn't surprise her in the slightest. One of the few things she'd learned as a Cornhusker was that students and hunters shared freakishly similar sleeping patterns. She wasn't sure whether it was bad luck or fate that the girl from the night before, Kat, was sitting at a table front and center. Kat caught her eye and waved her over as she stepped into the room, blowing her whole out-of-sight, out-of-mind plan straight out of the water. "So," Kat sat around a spoonful of yogurt, "there really is a ghost in the basement." "Looks like..." Jo set her tray on the table and dropped into the seat behind it. She shoved a couple fries into her mouth and blinked. Either dorm food had gotten better, or the hunter's life had killed her taste buds. "What were you doing downstairs last night?" Kat took a long sip from her soda and set it carefully back down, her eyes assessing Jo the entire time. My roommate was friends with the guy who just died. She told me that Matt had been hearing things, voices, in the corners. He thought he was going crazy. So you went straight from hearing voices to ghosts in the basement. Joe cocked an eyebrow. That's a bit of a stretch, don't you think? Kat snorted. Yeah, well, when you put it like that. She leaned forward, her voice dropping down. But every time I've had to go down that hallway, I've felt something. When Danielle told me about Matt, I knew it was more than nerves. And you thought you'd take care of it with a flashlight and a pocket full of salt? Kat shrugged. Somebody had to do something. Joe frowned and attacked her food. She knew the score, knew how dangerous it could be for someone like Kat, someone who didn't know what she was getting into. She'd be doing Kat, and herself most probably, a favor if she told her to leave well enough alone and go back to her women's history class or whatever. But she couldn't do it, couldn't make herself say the words. She knew that glint in Kat's eye, had seen that same determination in her own mirror more times than she could count. She wouldn't deny her the chance to do this, not after a lifetime of people throwing obstacles in her own path. She couldn't be that person. Joe looked up. Kat was staring at her, her jaw set and her mouth pinched. She hadn't touched a thing on her tray. What do you know about the East Quad's history? Any weird deaths or strange occurrences? Kat blinked in disbelief and then smiled big and bright. That was so totally not what I thought you were going to say. Joe couldn't help grinning in response. Yeah, well, going down to investigate the creepy basement with only a pocket full of salt was gutsy. Stupid, but gutsy. And you didn't answer my question. What isn't weird about East Quad? Kat twirled her spoon in the air. Did you know that the Unabomber lived here when he was an undergrad? If someone told me there was a hellmouth underneath this place, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm sure if Buffy showed up, you'd be the first to know, Joe joked, and then frowned in concentration. That thing downstairs had all the earmarks of a restless spirit, and they tend to be the byproducts of violent death. She stood up and picked up her empty tray. We need to find out more about this place. Looks like it's research time. Great, Kat drawled. This Ghostbuster stick just gets more and more glamorous. They ended up at the grad library, hunched over opposite microfilm machines. In the adjacent room, students scurried around looking up books, and bored employees with their carts full of books waited for an elevator, while a surprisingly young librarian reigned over it all, her benign smile both an invitation and a warning. She'd been extremely helpful when Kat described their research problem and asked for assistance. That she thought they were working on a history paper rather than a ghost hunt was all for the best. This was the part of hunting that had come as the largest shock. Joe was a product of the computer generation, and even her hip Nebraska high school had been entirely wired by the time she'd matriculated. She'd started hunting with a vague notion of the use and operation of microfiche readers, but no real experience with the behemoths. The damn things wore her out faster than any ghost ever had. She stretched her back, her vertebrae popping back into place. She unspooled one tape and replaced it with another scintillating edition of the Ann Arbor News. They'd been at this for hours, and Joe had gleaned more useless information about this one tiny portion of Michigan than any one brain should ever contain. The only silver lining was the pattern that had started to form. This wasn't the first mysterious rash of suicides that East Quad had witnessed, and she was well on her way to tracing the entire epidemic back to its source. She scrolled through the paper and stopped when just what she'd been looking for flashed across the screen. A victorious "Ha!" burst out before she could stop it. Neither the librarian's quelling glance nor the disgruntled mumbles of other microfilm users could dampen her satisfaction with what she'd found. "What have you got?" Kat whispered from her station. "I think I have our guy," Joe quietly crowed. Herb Progowski, a freshman in 1961 and an East Quad resident. The police found a note and chalked it up as a suicide, even though they never found the body. The article says that his roommate had reported him to health services a few days before due to erratic behavior and constant muttering. "All right, we've got our guy," Kat enthused, and started shutting down her machine. Any more time spent staring at this thing and I'd have had an aneurysm. "Not so fast," Joe sadistically smirked. "We still have to figure out where his body is, or what else might be keeping him here. A name isn't going to get rid of our problem for us." Kat groaned, and her head collapsed into her hands. Joe almost chuckled, but caught herself in time. Apparently, watching the newbie squirm was another one of the perks of being the experienced hunter on the job. But that simple joy didn't make the grim necessity of diving back into research any more appealing. Joe grimaced at the machine in particular, and life in general. Just as she was turning back to it, Kat grunted and sat up. Without a word, she started flipping through the notebook she'd been taking notes in. "What is it?" Joe asked. "I think I know what happened to the body." Kat's eyes scanned the page. There was a weird article in one of the old dailies. It was kind of a where-are-they-now piece about an East Quad RA who'd had a nervous breakdown in the middle of a lecture. He started screaming about the body in the basement and how it wouldn't stop whispering to him. He apparently spent some time in the hospital afterward. Joe frowned, her finger tapping absently against the table. "I never did get the chance to explore that whole passage." She smiled. "Are you thinking what I'm thinking?" "Does it have anything to do with finding rubber pants in our size?" Kat quibbed tiredly. "Nope," Joe chirped. "I'm thinking it's time to go give that creepy tunnel another look-see." The basement was nominally less foreboding in the late afternoon. It had at least a semblance of life, with the trickle of people racing up and down the stairs and kids laughing in the laundry rooms. The hallway to the computer lab was well lit, and while it would never be inviting, it no longer seemed intimidating. They stopped in front of the door that was hidden in plain sight. If she hadn't been looking for it, Joe was nearly positive that she would have walked right past it. It blended into the surrounding concrete nearly seamlessly. Even the dull metal handle seemed like one of the wall's natural outcroppings. She reached into the duffel and pulled out two flashlights, handing one to Kat. A tremor passed through the girl's hand, but she seemed steady. Joe resettled the bag on her shoulder and nodded. "All right, let's do this." The space behind the door seemed even more ominous when viewed through fluorescent lighting. A chill breeze blew out of the tunnel, and the lights around them flickered. Joe took a deep breath and stepped forward. They both only stepped through when the door slammed shut behind them. Joe blinked as her eyes adjusted and tried to breathe around the sudden lump in her throat. She couldn't afford to lose it now. "The door won't open." Kat's voice was thin and strangely muffled. Joe felt like she couldn't get enough air into her lungs. "I guess we're stuck here till this is settled." Joe bent over and rooted through the duffel by touch. She needed some reassurance. "Here." She passed Kat a shotgun. "This'll probably help." "Oh, you bet," Kat sighed in relief. They started down the passage, both lights scanning every nook and cranny for anything suspicious. The damp chill seeped into Joe's bones while whispers echoed out of every shadow. They turned the corner. The toolbox was gone, a slightly drier spot the only indication that it had ever been there in the first place. She could hear Kat's breathing loud to her right. It grew shallower and shallower with every step. She stopped suddenly and flicked the flashlight beam backward along its path. Her mind had caught something her eyes had missed. "Eureka," Joe breathed, and stepped up to the wall and ran her fingers along a crumbling seam of mortar. She glanced back at Kat. "Which of these things doesn't belong?" Kat stepped forward. "Not all of those bricks have mortar." "Exactly. I'd bet good money that that's where our body is." She pulled a hammer out of the bag and then handed the bag to Kat. "Get out the gas and salt and get ready to spray this sucker when I've got it uncovered. And watch my back. If things are going to get hairy, they're going to get that way fast." She pounded on the brickwork, with Kat a solid, comforting presence at her back. Her arm swung forward, and she felt the brick crumble through the hammer's haft. As soon as one brick was dislodged, the whole thing came apart. She jumped back as the wall tumbled down. A moment passed while they gaped at the ghastly remains uncovered by the collapse, before Kat jumped to work, pouring salt and gas over what was left of the body. Joe was pulling the matches out of her pocket when the air went deathly cold. Before she could yell, complete darkness engulfed her. Her back collided against the wall, and voices screamed in her head. A hand wrapped around her throat, and she couldn't breathe, couldn't see. She wanted to scream, but she couldn't. "Poor little girl doing a grown-up's job," a low voice sing-songed in her ear. She blinked, and she was back in Duluth, tied to a pole, waiting for Sam Winchester to stick a knife in her throat, or worse. It would be so much easier if you let it all go. It's what you deserve for breaking your mother's heart. Her daddy's knife was in her hand, but she wasn't lashing out. She couldn't. It rose slowly and inexorably toward her own throat. It was what she deserved. The heavy boom of a shotgun ricocheted off the claustrophobic walls, and Joe collapsed with nothing to hold her up. She gasped for breath. Living hands grabbed her and pulled her up. She opened her eyes, and Kat was there, flashlight in one hand, shotgun in the other. We have to finish the job. Cat's voice was shaky but firm. Joe struck a match and watched as the body caught fire. A shrill scream pierced the air, and then everything went still except for the crackle of the blaze. Cat handed her a shotgun and shouldered the bag herself. They walked out of the tunnel, and neither of them looked back. Somehow, Joe wasn't surprised to see Cat waiting for her outside of the dorm the next morning. The sky was clear for once, and even if the trees were still bare, the weather seemed to promise that spring was coming, even if it was taking its own sweet time. Cat looked up from the book she was reading, a bright grin crossing her face. "I was hoping you'd come out this way." She stood up and handed Joe the book. "I noticed this by the body before you torched it. I think it's good old Herb's journal." Joe flipped through the yellow pages covered in a spidery scrawl. "Does it say why he was entombed in a wall?" "I haven't gotten that far yet." Cat took the journal back and stuck it in the backpack slung over her shoulder. But he wasn't the steadiest character to begin with. And get this, our guy Rick, you know, the one who started raving about bodies in the basement, has a starring role. He was Herb's RA, and if this is anything to go by, they had a weird power dynamic going on. Every other line was, "Rick says," or "Rick told me to cheat on my test." I think my favorite was when Herb proclaimed that he wouldn't know who he was if Rick wasn't there to tell him. Joe whistled low. "People are fucking nuts." Cat nodded and looked away. An awkward silence descended. This was why Joe had been hoping to quietly disappear. She sucked at goodbyes. Cat fiddled with the string on her shirt and frowned. She opened and closed her mouth as if she wanted to say something, but couldn't quite figure out which sounds to make. I'm gonna head out," Joe finally said, the words rushing out of her mouth. "You want to walk me to my car?" Cat nodded, and they started down the sidewalk. "My boyfriend Gavin's in California," Cat finally said as they were crossing the street. "Huh," Joe grunted. She wasn't sure what that had to do with anything, but she'd play along. "I mean, my ex-boyfriend. He's stalking a cheerleader or something." Cat curtly shook her head, as if she were abruptly putting her thoughts in order. "Anyway, the first time I saw a ghost, it was because Gavin thought a great date consisted of breaking into a haunted asylum and almost getting us both killed." "Sounds like a great guy," Joe said, the sarcasm dripping from her voice. Cat chuckled. "Yeah, tell me about it. It's kind of funny. The whole reason I came to Michigan was to get away from all of the crazy stuff I saw there, and instead I landed right in the middle of more." She shrugged. "Life is bizarre." "Tell me about it," Joe commiserated. "The last time I was in a dorm, I wouldn't have batted an eye if something killed every single person in the place. The slaughter of all the people who called me Crazy Knife Girl would have felt like poetic justice. And now look at me." "I don't know," Cat mused. "You still seem like Crazy Knife Girl to me." "Takes one to know one," Joe teased. Cat's teeth flashed white through a quick grin. They walked in companionable silence for the next few blocks. It made Joe realize how lonely she'd been in the past few months. It felt good to be with someone who knew what she did and let her do it, who knew her and didn't run screaming for the cops or straight to the phone to call her mother. Joe's old blue truck was still sitting where she'd parked it, not a ticket in sight. She opened the door and swung her bag into the cab. She turned back to Cat, her brain stumbling around for what to say. "Are you going to stick around after all of this?" was what finally came out. Cat nodded firmly. "As sappy as it sounds, I like it here. My classes are interesting, and I made some really good friends." She smirked. "Plus, if the cops catch me smoking pot, I'll only get, like, a $15 fine. Joe laughed. "I'll have to remember to tell my buddy Ash. He'll be on the next bus. Though you'll have to watch out. He has this problem keeping his clothes on when he's high." She shuddered theatrically. Then she sobered and looked Cat directly in the eye. "So you're really fine with living on a hellmouth?" "Oh, yeah." Cat smiled, drawing the vowels out. "And don't worry." She patted her pocket. "I've got your number safely programmed into my phone. When Buffy shows up, you'll totally be the second to know." "Excellent." Joe stepped up into the truck and suddenly had an idea. "Give me your bag," she ordered with a devilish grin. Cat wordlessly handed it up, her bemused expression speaking volumes. Joe pulled a shotgun out of the duffel and blatantly stuffed it in Cat's backpack. "Consider this my way of thanking you for saving my life. From one crazy knife girl to another," she finished with a wink. "Awesome," Cat cackled. I'll have to let you return the favor one of these days. Joe smiled. I'm going to hold you to that. She handed the bag back down and put the key in the ignition. I'll see you around. Her smile broadened, and she slammed the door shut. She maneuvered the truck out of its spot and waved to Kat as she headed off toward the freeway. At the stoplight, the strongest urge to call her mom swept over her, to hear her voice and know that she was okay. The light changed and she sped on through the intersection. She called after she got to Indiana and started looking into that rash of freak electrical storms. She rolled down her window and felt the wind on her face. It was going to be a good day. Sugar and Spice and Everything Nice, a sequel to More Than Just a Pretty Face. The bar door slammed shut behind Kat, its force pushing her another step forward. She blinked rapidly, letting her eyes adjust to the dimness after the bright sun of an Austin afternoon. The interior slowly came into focus, the same dinged-up tables and mismatched chairs as nearly every bar she'd trolled through in the past few days, complete with Patsy Cline crooning out of the jukebox. A man sat slouched over at the far end of the bar, his shoulders up around his ears and his hands wrapped around a bottle. The bartender haphazardly polished a glass, his dirty rag only making the smudges worse. Neither man looked up. She sidled up to the bar. The bartender flicked his eyes over her and then looked away, nothing but dispirited observation in his glance. She knew she looked like crap. She felt like it, too. She'd been searching for a long time, and she could feel every weary mile as a buzzing exhaustion under her skin. She was grimy and sweaty, Texas taking its own payment out of her hide, and she didn't even want to think about her hair. But it didn't matter. She wasn't going to stop until she found her quarry. "I'll have a bud, please." Her voice creaked from too much secondhand smoke and too little fresh air. The bartender grunted in reply and pulled a long neck out of the fridge under the bar. He cracked it open for her and even gave her a napkin. A little Midwestern courtesy always got a result. Kat took a swig, grateful for the cool liquid that bubbled down her throat. She sighed softly and then reached into her shirt pocket and pulled out a battered photo. It had seen better days, the edges worn and the picture creased, but you could still plainly see a young blonde girl with a frozen smile set before a ubiquitous blue backdrop, the same one used on school picture days the country over. She set it down on the bar, careful to avoid a sticky puddle. "Maybe you can help me out," she said, and used a finger to push the paper closer to the other side of the bar. "I'm looking for someone, and the last I heard she was tending bar down here in Austin." The bartender picked up the photo and studied it, eyes squinting in concentration. He looked back up at her, a suspicious glint in his eye. "What, she owe you money? Or did she steal your boy and you're looking for a little payback?" None of which was necessarily a no. Kat smiled bright and hoped her face looked extra convincing. "No, nothing like that. She's my cousin, and she kind of dropped off the radar a couple months ago. My aunt's been going crazy. We don't want to hassle her. We just want to make sure she's okay." The lie skipped easily from her lips, as well it should after all those hours she'd spent repeating it to herself during the never-ending drive. But even that story didn't seem to soften the bartender up any. He hummed and glanced down at the photo. His mouth tightened and his head gave an involuntary negative jerk. "Here, let me see." The drunk from down the bar had meandered over, drawn by the drama of their discussion. He grabbed the photo before the bartender could yank it away. "Lenny," the bartender growled, warning in his body's stiff lines. "Ah, yeah, that's Bethy," Lenny the drunk blithely declared, completely oblivious to the bartender's disapproval. He tilted his head and squinted at the photo. "She's a little older nowadays, but it's the same girl. I bet on it." Kat plucked the photo from Lenny's hand. "That's wonderful," she beamed. "Do you know where I can find her?" Lenny shook his head, his face a caricature of seriousness. "Nah, but she works here. Just ask Mark over there." His hand flopped in the bartender's general direction. Mark looked her up and down again, that same secretive, disapproving mask on his face. "Yeah, she works here." His mouth tightened even further. "I'm not going to tell you where she lives, but she'll be on later tonight. If you wait around, you might run into her." "Thank you so much," Kat said, the earnestness ratcheted up to maximum. She grabbed her beer and headed over to a table in the far corner, Mark's suspicion hot on her neck. She picked a chair with a good view of the bar and settled in for the long haul. Time passed, and the bar filled up with a pretty equal mix of students and after-hour office drones and rumpled suits. One of the nice things about Austin was the lack of cigarette smoke in its bars. Other places hadn't been as health-conscious. It was a good thing Kat was lucky enough not to have the kind of allergies that had tormented her old roommate. She'd have been pretty screwed in the past few months if she hadn't been able to spend long chunks of time in smoke-filled, nicotine-tinged dives. Her stomach rumbled, but she ignored it. She really didn't want to have to deal with that bartender again. Plus, she was dangerously low on money. If Joe didn't turn up to comp her drink, she'd be pretty screwed. She chewed thoughtfully on her pen, her attention divided between the people going in and out of the front door and the note spread out on the table in front of her. A good chunk of her time in Austin had been spent kicking her heels, waiting around for someone who wasn't going to appear, so she'd started picking up random newspapers. It was blind luck that had dropped a really weird set of coincidences in her lap via unrelated articles in different papers. The piece de resistance had appeared in this morning's Austin Statesman, and while the front page photo of a jumble of charred corpses piled in a field turned her stomach, She knew that it proved her theory. Something was definitely rotten in Denmark, and she was going to do something about it. A flash of blonde hair by the door pulled her out of her investigation. She looked over, a response born more from habit than from any actual belief that Joe would appear. She was running on the dregs of stubborn persistence, hope having been abandoned a long way back on the road. Her eyes tracked that long hair as it bobbed over to the bar. The person was certainly slight enough to be Joe, but Kat wasn't going to make any assumptions, not until she had something more credible to go on. One tackling hug of a total stranger had definitely taught her that lesson. The figure bent over the bar and talked to Mark, who smiled at first, then frowned. His hands gestured as he told some story, and then he pointed straight at Kat's table. Tension clawed up her chest. The blonde turned around. It was Joe. They stared at each other across the room, identical looks of shocked recognition stamped across their faces. Kat couldn't believe it. She was really here. After all of her searching, she finally found her. Kat's mouth began to spread in an ecstatic smile when Joe suddenly turned and rushed out of the bar. The crack of the door slamming shut ricocheted in Kat's head. She sat frozen and stunned for a moment, liquid pooling in the corners of her eyes. She'd never imagined that Joe would walk away from her. She swallowed hard around the lump in her throat. A wave of anger flashed through her, drowning out any sorrow. Screw that. She hadn't come this far not to get some freaking answers. In a single movement, she shoved the papers on the table back into their folder, grabbed her bag, and stood up. She wouldn't let Joe get away that easily. She banged out of the bar. It was dark outside and hot, the day's heat still radiating out from the concrete and asphalt. Groups of people trickled through the open spaces, their conversation strangely muffled under the weight of the clouds that had crept in since the afternoon. The high-pitched howl of an ambulance blew by from a distant street. Kat searched the crowd, eyes flitting from one dark gap to the next. A flash of streetlight bouncing off of bright hair sparked in the corner of her eye. She turned without thought, going on instinct, and ran down a nearby alley. She grabbed the door of a beat-up old blue pickup as it was closing and wrenched it open. "You don't get to escape that easily," she said, heart pounding in her chest. "Go home, Kat," Joe said, tired and low, her face hidden in shadow. "No, no way. Not a chance. I spent way too much time looking for you to not get some answers." Joe snorted a brief, bitter laugh. "If that's what you want, then you're out of luck. I don't know Jack." She sighed. "You shouldn't be here. It's not safe." "Like anywhere is safe," Kat scoffed. "You're the one who told me about that Devil's Gate opening in Wyoming. And then you say you're going to work a demon job down in Texas. And then poof, you disappear. You don't call, you don't email, and I'm left freaked out of my mind. I thought you were dead. The least you owe me is a reason why." Joe leaned forward out of the shadows, her mouth drawn into a tight, angry line. "Maybe you should have taken the clue and left me the hell alone." The corner of her mouth curved upward into a cruel smirk. "Sorry, honey. It's not me. It's you." Rage spiked in Kat's chest. Her hand trembled on the door. "Yeah, sure. It's all my fault. 'Cause you're just fine, hanging out in Austin, not talking to anyone, working in some yuppie bar, and ignoring everything that's going on around you." She pitched the folder into the cab. Its papers spilled out all over the bench and the floor. "I bet you never even realize something big is going on around here. People are dying, and you're sticking your head in the sand." Her mouth twisted with disgust. "I expected better from you." "You don't know what you're talking about," Joe growled. "Hunting isn't some kind of game you can play in your free time. People die, and there's nothing you can do about it." "So, what, things get a little scary and you just pack it in and give up?" Kat shook her head in disgust. "I never thought you were a quitter. That's because you never knew me at all." "Bullshit," Kat said, anger and scorn sharpening the syllables into spikes. "So you're not dead, yay, whatever." She slammed the truck door shut. "I'll see you around. I've got work to do." Kat walked off down the alley and out onto the street. Thunder boomed somewhere in the distance, and a few lukewarm drops fell from the sky. She didn't look back. A warm, damp wind blew over the barren field. The rustle of the tall, dry grass shivered up Kat's neck. The ambient light that bounced off of the low-hanging clouds saved the night from being too dark, but a thick, expectant silence pinged Kat's nerves, keeping her wary and on edge. The threatening rain had yet to fall, the world holding its breath until it did. She ducked under the muted yellow police tape. The grass had been trampled into a large, shapeless expanse centered around an ashen indentation in the soil. She knelt and studied the charred scar. Her mind called up the report she'd read, the images of the burned, dismembered corpses that had been found. The police had released statements about serial killers and ritualistic cults. Standard cop code, for they didn't know what the hell was going on or what the fuck they were looking for. Kat pulled a pen out of her jacket and poked at the charred ground. The pungent stink of sulfur that wafted up from the dust made her nose twitch. She knocked some of the dirt into a Ziploc baggie and put it carefully into her right pocket. She didn't know if taking it would do any good, but it made her feel like she was accomplishing something. She stood up and cracked her back. She turned in a circle, eyes gazing over the scene, her mouth set in a thin, frustrated line. Something awful had happened here. She could feel it, but she had no clue what might have caused it or whether it was going to happen again. This was a whole lot bigger than a haunted lab or a cursed fraternity. She was swimming against the tide, and all she could do was keep on going and hope that something she did had an effect. She'd hoped to have a little help on this case, but it looked like she was on her own. Kat walked along the edge of the tramped-down grass, scanning the ground, looking for anything the police might have missed, anything that might clue her in. The wind dropped off as she searched, and sweat prickled the back of her neck. The world still, the soft crackle of dead grass being trampled under shoes, the only thing she could hear. Her chest tightened. She felt like she was being watched. She jumped when a rough grumble of thunder rolled overhead. She froze, heart pounding. A dark figure crouched in the grass across from her. She could feel his stare. Her hands clenched into fists, and panic gripped at her throat. She didn't know what to do. A flash of lightning cracked overhead. The field glowed for a second, a confused backwards negative of reality. The figure in the grass stood and shudder-jerked across the field, its eyes dark holes. Rock salt dribbled out of Kat's hands. All of her old tricks wouldn't help her now. She would have given anything for the gun that she'd left in her car. The lightning flashed again, and the figure was in front of her. It cocked its head to the side. It licked its lips, a hungry curl to its mouth. It reached its hand up and caressed the side of her face. Invisible maggots crawled across her flesh. "Kat!" a familiar voice shouted as a stream of water arched across her vision. The creature in front of her screamed as the water hit and bubbled like acid on its skin. A hand grabbed hers and pulled her away. "We have to get out of here," Joe yelled as thunder pealed through the air. Kat nodded. Her mouth opened to respond, but the words died unsaid as other figures appeared out of the grass. They were surrounded. Lightning bolted from the sky, striking the ground near them, so close that Kat could feel the electricity sizzle through the earth. Dirt exploded into the air, and one of the demons screamed. Pandemonium erupted in the surrounding horde. Joe splashed holy water on the nearest demon and pulled Kat out of the circle while it was stunned. Kat clung to Joe's hand, the only sure object in a world gone mad. They ran through the grass as the clouds unleashed their torrent and lightning crackled in their wake. Joe pushed the motel door open and strode into the room. She was soaked through, her hair straggled down her back, and her pants were coated in mud. She tracked dirty footprints across the almost neon green carpet. Kat followed her into the room, feeling as miserable as the other woman looked. Her hands shook, and she couldn't make them stop. She didn't know whether she wanted to cry or vomit. She caught the towel that Joe pitched at her and started scrubbing it over her hair. Joe wouldn't even look in Kat's direction. She just started changing her clothes as if there was no one else in the room. Joe hadn't said a word since they'd escaped into her waiting truck. She'd driven like a bat out of hell, her eyes never once straying over to the woman on the other side of the cab. The silence was awful, and Kat didn't know how to break it. Instead, she looked around the room and tried to feel safe. It was small and cluttered, the bed unmade with clothes scattered haphazardly over the chair beside it. Takeout containers were strewn over the table nudged up against the far wall, and the carpet crunched with spilled salt. Joe had drawn sigils on every open surface, the walls a collage of symbols, a melange of every color of Sharpie in the box. A shotgun stood sentry in the corner closest to the bed. "You're a fucking moron," Joe said to the dresser, her back still presented to the rest of the room. She yanked a dry tank top over her head. "Yeah," Kat said, more of an exhalation than a word. Joe rounded on her, her hands gripped white-knuckled around a long-sleeved shirt. "You don't get it. You almost died out there. Those demons were going to kill you, and they wouldn't have been nice about it. They would have taken their time, milking you for every scream and enjoying every goddamn minute of it." She advanced on Kat with every bitten-off word until they were face-to-face, breathing in the same air. Blood pounded in Kat's ears. She couldn't look away from Joe's ravaged eyes, frozen in the twin fear and anger she saw there. She didn't know what to say. "Jesus Christ," Joe ground out in a harsh voice. She whipped away, flinging the shirt at her bed and stalking to the window. She leaned against the windowsill. "Are you done playing yet?" "I'm not playing a goddamn game," Kat shouted, the words erupting through the barrier in her throat. She threw her towel at the wall, where it hit with a damp splat. "Did you even look at that stuff I gave you? People are dying out there, and someone has to do something." "You're just going to get yourself killed," Joe sighed. "So the fuck what?" Kat crossed the room, her hands balled into fists. "At least I'll have done something." She grabbed Joe's shoulder and spun her around. "I'm not a quitter, not like you." "Shut your goddamn mouth," Joe hissed, and shoved Kat away. "Make me," Kat replied, her jaw tight. Long seconds ticked by as they stared at each other. Kat's whole body hurt, the long miles and even longer nights finally taking their toll. She collapsed against the wall, the back of her head hitting it with a hollow thunk. She closed her eyes. "Help me do this, please," she whispered. "Yes, Joanna Harvell. Help us," an implacable voice replied. Kat jerked straight, her eyes flying open as a shotgun snick-clacked into use. Joe had the gun pointed at a woman standing in front of the closed door. The woman merely gazed serenely at them, the white of her dress and the blonde of her hair the most vibrant colors Kat had ever seen. "I am Miriam, an angel of the Lord," the woman stated simply. Her voice sounded a chord deep in Kat's being. Somehow, she could not doubt her. "Like hell you are," Joe replied. The barrel of the shotgun twitched, but she stood firm. "Get out of my room." "Peace, Joanna Beth." The woman glided across the floor and plucked the gun from Joe's hands. "You already know I speak the truth." Kat moved to put a hand on Joe's arm, whether in comfort or restraint she didn't know. Joe's body vibrated under her hand, a thread stretched too thin. "How? Why?" Joe drew in heavy breaths, and her eyes were thick with tears. The angel smiled, and the room warmed. "You have been chosen, both of you." The angel looked at Kat, who couldn't draw her eyes away from the endless depths in those eyes. "What can we do?" Kat rasped. Miriam's smile widened, and pure light surrounded them. Kat's heart battered against her chest in either joy or terror. Joe reached up and grabbed Kat's hand, her fingers squeezing tight. "There is much to tell," was the inevitable reply. 66 seals? Seriously? Joe snorted. Miriam raised an eyebrow. Goat-sucking monsters? Seriously? Kat giggled, and even Joe grinned a little. Kat dropped her wet shirt next to the bathroom door and smoothed her hands over her borrowed duds. "So we have to stop some hotshot demon from releasing a plague and bringing us one step closer to Armageddon." She sat down on the edge of the bed next to Joe. "But what I don't understand is what any of that has to do with a field full of burned corpses." "Nothing, in and of itself." Miriam frowned with sorrow. "The demon Lilith chose to accomplish this task is known as Baal. Thousands of years ago, he was worshipped as a god and was offered burnt sacrifices. Parents would offer their living children to Baal's flames, just as children would offer their parents in turn. It was considered a great honor to be given to appease Baal's vast hunger. Upon his release from hell, his demonic followers eagerly reinitiated the practice." "That's what I don't understand." Joe's voice was hoarse, and her body radiated exhausted tension. "There's so much evil. I mean, hell, even before the Devil's Gate was opened, we were just barely staying afloat. And now..." She swallowed and looked away. "You're here now. But where have you been? If God is good, then where has he been hiding?" Miriam leaned forward and placed her hand on Joe's knee. You should not blame yourself for Brian's death. She gazed at her kindly as Joe blinked tears out of her eyes. Many of my kind would tell you that it is all part of the Creator's plan and that you should not sorrow. For myself, I do not think that God can be God if he plans for such evil. I can only have faith that I will find comfort and understanding in time when all has been revealed. You don't know any more than we do, Cat gasped in sudden understanding. Miriam laughed and sat up straight. No, not much. We angels are not very different from you humans. We simply have fewer choices. We can serve or fall, and there isn't much wriggle room between. So what good are you? Cat's question more curious than combative. I apparently can't offer much help with the deep metaphysical questions of life, but I am able to do a few things. Or have you not realized yet who it was that provided the lightning during your encounter earlier tonight? Miriam's eyebrow raised in wry, Vulcan-like observation. Cat gaped in awe, her mouth hanging open in a way she only thought happened in the cartoons. She felt kind of like an idiot, but in her defense, it had been a really long, weird night. Miriam's smile widened in good-natured amusement. She rose from her chair. You both should rest. Tomorrow will be soon enough to accomplish our task. Her gaze strayed over Joe, and her face softened with empathy. Thank you both for your willingness to assist me. The sound of innumerable wings fluttered through the air as Miriam disappeared. Cat waited as her mind tried to make sense of everything that had happened. She'd woken up that morning certain of who she was and her place in the cosmos, and now she wasn't sure of anything. She didn't know what tomorrow might bring, or even if she'd be around for long enough for any of it to matter. It was all deeply unnerving and utterly exciting at the same exact time. An uncomfortable silence stretched in the room. Cat looked out of the corner of her eyes and saw that Joe was hunched over. She had pulled into herself and was staring blindly at the floor, her mouth clenched flat. She looked very alone. Cat cleared her throat and Joe looked up, startled, as if she'd forgotten that anyone else was in the room. I guess I'll go call a cab and have them take me back to my place. Cat stood up and shrugged a little awkwardly. I'll see you tomorrow. Joe just stared, her face blank. Disappointment dropped in Cat's chest. She should have known that she wouldn't be wanted. She turned toward the door. Wait, Joe said when Cat's hand fell on the doorknob. You don't have to go. Cat couldn't stop the smile that bloomed across her face. Okay then, she said, and turned back to the room. Cat shoveled hash browns into her mouth by the heaping forkful. Nothing except maybe the apocalypse was going to interrupt her communion with her breakfast, and the apocalypse might have to wait in line. She scraped the last bit of yolky, potatoey mess off of her plate and into her mouth, the fork screeching against the cheap diner porcelain. She sat back with a contented sigh. Food had never tasted so good. Joe regarded her with an amused little grin over her still half-full plate. A little hungry? Shut up. Cat snorted a laugh. I've been kind of preoccupied lately, and food wasn't at the top of my priority list. Joe hissed and waved a fork at her admonishingly. First rule of hunting, never work on an empty stomach. It's a good way to wind up lunch for something else. I am a tasty morsel. Cat nodded with an exaggerated frown of seriousness. What other tips do you have, O font of hunting wisdom? Don't steal your partner's bacon. Joe slapped away the hand that Cat had been inching across the table toward the other plate. You had plenty of your own. There's never enough bacon. Cat grinned and sat back in the booth. She grabbed her coffee instead and took a long sip, taking a look around while she drank. The diner was mostly empty. They'd managed to hit it at that ideal time between the breakfast and lunch rushes when the staff was trying to recover enough to handle the next wave. So while their food had taken forever to arrive, they also hadn't been bothered every other minute by a waitress trying to refresh their coffee, a definite bonus when you were seriously discussing how to stop the demons from ending the world. You know, Cat mused, something about this whole angel thing feels kind of, I don't know, absurd. It's like we've wandered into an overblown Sunday evening show on CBS. I have often had similar thoughts myself, Miriam said from behind Cat's shoulder. She slid into the booth next to Joe and grinned at the embarrassed blush that crept up Cat's face. Though on my best days, I can only aspire to being as formidable as Della Reese. While Cat sat flabbergasted, trying to come up with an appropriate response, Miriam looked at Joe's plate and raised an inquisitive eyebrow. Joe grinned and handed her a strip of bacon. "Hey," Kat said, an involuntary reaction learned from years of snotty little siblinghood. "Why does she get bacon?" "Because she's an angel," Joe replied, nonplussed. "It is one of the unspoken perks," Miriam responded, but she broke the strip in half and offered part of it to Kat. "Thanks," Kat muttered, and took her piece. Frankly, she was finding the entire situation a little unnerving and surreal. There was something deeply unsettling about sitting across from a bacon-eating angel in a grimy, greasy spoon. Joe pushed her plate away and turned a little so that she was at an angle where she could see everyone at the booth at the same time. "Last night you had a lot to say about the end of the world, but you didn't mention any specifics about what we're supposed to do." "Specifics that I will be happy to share with you at this precise moment." Miriam brushed invisible crumbs from her fingers. "As I said last night, the seal that we are meant to protect is one that would unleash devastating plague upon the world. Of all of the seals, it is one of the most vile. I guess we're talking more Stephen King, Captain Trips kind of plague than a bad head cold," Kat posited. "Quite," Miriam succinctly replied. "Researchers at UT Austin have been experimenting with many forms of viral infection in an effort to gain a more thorough understanding of disease and how to prevent its spread. It is Bale's design to take and corrupt the research into an unholy organism. If we do not stop the ritual he undertakes today, then great evil will be released." "But why do you need our help?" Joe asked, cynicism thick in her voice. "I'd think an angel would have a pretty easy time putting a couple of demons in their place, no matter how super-duper evil they might be." "Unfortunately, it is not that simple." Miriam sighed. "The older, more powerful demons like Bale are difficult to subdue, and he has surrounded himself with many demons almost as powerful as he. Also, they have coated their abode with perversions of angelic script that can be used to lock out me and my siblings." Joe stared at Miriam, her forehead creased in thought. "So you need Kat and me to sneak into the building and erase some of those symbols?" "Yes, and to do everything in your power to delay the ritual." "Are any other angels going to show up to help us?" Kat asked. Tension was building deep in her chest. The reality of saving the world was a lot more harrowing than the theory was. "No. We are stretched thin as we attempt to stop Lilith. There are many possible roads she could travel, and we are hard-pressed in trying to anticipate and prevent her actions." Joe sighed and rubbed a hand over her face. "And we have to do this today. No time for more prep or research." Miriam dipped her head in an affirmative reply. Joe looked over at Kat, her question implicit in the set of her mouth. Kat nodded over the panic that nipped at the edges of her mind. She was with them, no matter what. "I guess we better get it over with," Joe announced for them both. It was now or never. "Here." Joe handed Kat a charm strung on a leather cord. They were standing across from a ramshackle warehouse a few miles from the city. It was situated in an industrial park that had seen better days. The glass from broken windows glittered on the ground between the buildings, and brown weeds pushed through cracks in the asphalt drives. "What's this?" Kat asked. She turned the dull trinket around in her fingers, studying it under the blinding light of the late afternoon sun. "It'll protect you from possession. It should keep any of those bastards from getting up inside of you." Kat grimaced at the thought. "Ew. Thanks." Joe's mouth quirked in an amused understanding before they both turned to stare at their target. The warehouse was just as run down as its neighbors, but where they only looked abandoned, the building across from them seemed to radiate malevolence. Kat wasn't sure whether the noxious aura she could almost see was a product of her preformed judgments or not, but it still turned her stomach. Her imagination was full of all of the atrocities the building must have witnessed over the years. She didn't want to go in there, but she wouldn't let Joe handle it alone. Wings fluttered on the edges of her mind, and Miriam appeared in front of them. She had left them there to reconnoiter their target, and now she returned with a grim mask drawn across her features. Her rival was anything but reassuring. "It is worse than I feared," Miriam said without preamble. "The symbols are drawn inside of the building and are invisible to your eyes. There is no way for me to discover how many demons have congregated or what their ritual will entail." "What can we do?" Kat asked, scared but determined. Miriam smiled at her as if her puny courage was an extraordinary thing. You will have to enter the building and draw a certain sigil on the walls. One on every side of the building should suffice. Observe. She reached out and grabbed their wrists. Kat flinched as a burning sting shot up the inside of her arm. A moment passed, and Miriam stepped back. Kat gasped out of breath and looked at her left arm. Tattooed on the tender part of her wrist was a design she'd never seen before. "Are you set? Do you have everything you need?" Miriam asked. Joe nodded in assent. "We have everything we can carry. Stay hidden and safe." Miriam stepped up to Joe and reverently placed two fingers on her forehead, a gesture she repeated on Kat. A flush of real or perceived warmth rushed through Kat's body. "Go with my blessing. May God be with you." "Also," she added before they had taken more than a few steps, "if I should tell you to look away, you must do so, regardless of how dire the situation may be. There are things you cannot see and remain whole." Kat and Joe shared a loaded glance before nodding silently in agreement. It was one crazy thing after another, and Kat didn't dare envision what might come next. All they had to do was draw a couple symbols. They could do this. They climbed through a shattered window into an abandoned office. The warehouse was dark and cold when they entered it. The chill froze Kat's breath in her throat. The sense of something deeply wrong lodged in her chest. Joe uncapped her Sharpie and quickly drew the symbol in the shadows under the window. She glanced over her shoulder and her grin flashed bright in the dark. She stood up and raised a finger. One down, three to go. Light flickered in the cracks underneath and around the edges of the partially open door. Joe gestured, and they took positions on either side of the door. She peeked into the other room and slowly opened the door before ducking out in one quick, fluid motion. Kat followed on her heels. They crouched behind a pile of debris. Figures milled on the far end of the large room, only alike in their studied normalcy and the foul aura that shimmered from them, too powerful for any nonchalance to overcome. The low hum of scattered conversations echoed off the shadowed concrete walls. The girls scuttled carefully from pile to pile, Joe in the lead and Kat behind. A wild confidence pounded through Kat's veins when they made it to the right-hand wall and Joe began to draw the symbol. They were going to do this. They were going to win. Kat practically jumped out of her skin when the heavy double doors on the other side of the warehouse slammed open. Her head whipped around, and she saw a small, pale man walk in. He held himself as if he were the center of the universe, and all else orbited around him. He made her skin crawl, but she couldn't look away. The room went still. Joe tapped her shoulder and quickly slapped her hand over Kat's mouth to block the noise she hadn't meant to make. She gave Kat a long, hard look and then jerked her head toward the next wall. The job. She had to work the job. The cacophony of conversation picked up again as they crept from one shadow to the next. They were close enough to see the thick candles that sat ablaze in elaborate holders and the symbols that were painted on the floor in what Kat feared was blood. Demons with black, bottomless eyes arranged vials on a card table in chaotic order. She crouched behind a wooden crate and peered out at the milling crowd, holy water and shotgun clutched in her hands. Joe drew on the wall. They were so close to winning that Kat could taste it. Wood clattered, and Kat brought her gun up, eyes and barrel tracking the shadows. Before she could move, a hand reached out and gripped Joe by the back of her neck and pulled her away. Kat only had time to catch a glimpse of Joe's face, stark and terrified, before her partner was pulled into the flickering light. But somehow Kat hadn't been seen. Somehow she was safe. Her hand shook around the stock of the gun. She'd understood the message that was bright in Joe's eyes. The mission came first. She hated herself for turning away from Joe and creeping toward the final wall. A heavy silence descended on the warehouse as Kat crept around the final corner. She pulled out her marker and began to draw, her eyes fixed on the design imprinted on her wrist. She didn't let herself listen to the smooth, hypnotic voice that rose from behind her or the clear defiance of Joe's response. The fierce bite of a cramp cut through her hand, gripped too tight around the pen, but she didn't let go and she didn't stop. She wouldn't even let her fingers vibrate with the tremor she could feel building in every nerve. She was extending her hand to draw the final line when a strong hand clamped the back of her head and pulled her away. Her pen flew one way and her gun the other, but she only had eyes for the lines on the wall. She couldn't tell if she'd finished the design or not. Her leg collided with the sharp edge of a metal bed frame and the bright flare of pain wrenched her attention away from the wall. The demon threw her down into the center of an alien symbol, and she landed hard on her knees next to Joe. Blood trickled down Joe's face from a gash on her forehead, the beginnings of a bruise painting the right side of her face. A light-haired demon towered over her, rage in his eyes and an ugly, bubbling gash on his face. A small knife glinted at his feet. The small, pale man stood before them, avid lust transparent on his face. His eyes burned with a dark, terrifying hunger. His smile was the worst thing Cat had ever seen. He clapped slowly, and the death's mass rictus of his smile widened. Two for the price of one. How delightful. He reached down and gently tucked a straggling piece of hair behind Cat's ear. His touch was familiar and awful. I was so hoping that my two favorite girls would show up again after we had so much fun last night. I always say, you can't keep a good hunter down. He grabbed her chin and raised her face until she could do nothing but stare into eyes that were bright with the light that didn't shine, only consumed. She couldn't breathe. Get your hands off her, asshole! Joe's voice broke through her sick reverie. The demon released Cat, and she fell forward, gagging on bile. Temper, temper, he admonished in a voice both sick and sweet. Don't make me reprimand you again. Cat weakly pushed herself back up onto her knees. You won't get away with this, she gasped. But my dear, I already have. He chortled and turned to the table behind him. When he turned back, he held two vials in his hand, filled with a clear liquid. Not even your pet angel can save you now. He held the vials over his head, and the candles went out. A low, rhythmic chant rose in the dark from all around them. It started as a whisper and grew until it was all Cat could hear, all that she knew. The symbols on the floor began to grow with a sickly green light. The vials shined in the same unlight, floating in the air. Somehow, she found Joe's hand in the dark. She held on to her and prayed. A nova of white light exploded through the warehouse, coalescing into a woman's form. The candles flared back to light, and the demons cringed. Bail! Halt! The angel's voice ricocheted through time and space, implacable. I abjure thee and command thee to depart. Bale's hideous laughter cut through the frozen world, shattering the power of Miriam's words. You're too late, angel. My work here is done. He held out the vials that still glowed with a noxious light. Alone, you cannot stop me. The horde of demons closed ranks around him, blocking Miriam from view. Bale reached down and pulled Cat to her feet. My very own Typhoid Mary, he whispered with loathsome delight. Cat didn't think she'd ever be able to get clean again. One iron hand tipped her head back and held her mouth open, while the other brought the vials level with her lips. Cat wanted to scream, to lash out, to run, but she couldn't look away from the horror that swirled in his eyes. A blade slashed out and carved Bale's neck open, Joe's hand steady and sure. Blood poured out, and he shrieked. He released Cat, and as she fell to the ground, he grabbed Joe's neck and squeezed. White light flashed in the corners of Cat's eyes, and from far away she heard a demon scream its death throes. It wasn't close enough. Miriam wouldn't make it through in time to save any of them. Cat silently implored salvation from a god she wasn't sure could hear. Quiet, indomitable words floated up from Cat's core. Close your eyes, whispered through her mind. She obeyed. A silent explosion ripped through the air, and a light brighter than the sun burned red through her eyelids. A torrent of anguished screams rose around her, and she covered her ears. With a merciful burst, conscious thought was torn away. She dropped gratefully into the dark, a stone slipping down through still waters. There was peace in the end. Cat squinted against the early morning sun that spilled through her windshield as she pulled into the motel's parking lot and stopped. She turned her car's engine off with a flick of her wrist and sat for a second, listening to her heart beat. She stared at the paint peeling off of the garish sign with a frown. She didn't know what she was doing there. She had no idea if she'd be welcome, and she wasn't even sure whether she wanted to confirm the reality of her memories of the past few days or not. She squared her shoulders and levered herself out of the car. She wasn't going to chicken out now. The force of her knock sounded through the motel's cheap plywood walls. A loaded, expectant moment ticked by while she waited for a response. The door opened and Joe appeared, her hair still wet from the shower. A darkly vibrant bruise colored one side of her face, and a red welt slashed across her hairline. A purple handprint circled her throat like a necklace. Kat grabbed the doorframe, the world unsteady under her feet. "It all really happened," she gasped. Joe's face brightened in rueful amusement. "Yes, we met an angel, and yes, we might have helped save the world." She stepped back and gestured Kat into the room. Kat fell into the room's hard chair with a thud, still shaken by all of the memories that were surging across her mind. "Do you know what happened at the end? Because one second I was watching that demon choke the life out of you, and the next I was waking up in my car with the worst headache of my life." Joe sat down on the bed across from her. "I don't know. I blacked out just like you did." She shrugged. "But I figured that if the bad guys had won, we wouldn't be here talking to each other." Kat nodded wordlessly, her mind still struggling to put everything into perspective. "I guess not," she finally muttered. The mingled fear and awe of the angel's appearance flashed across her memory. "I wonder what happened to Miriam." "I guess she went back to wherever it is angels go when they're not smacking down demons." Joe's tone was irreverent, but Kat could hear the wonder behind it. "But, you know, I kind of hope we never run into her again. Know what I mean?" "Yeah." Kat's face creased with humor. "Averting one seal of the apocalypse is more than enough for me." Joe collapsed backward onto the bed, sudden laughter ripping through her. "I went head to head with the end of the world. My mom is going to kill me," she gasped. Uncontrolled giggles hiccuped out of Kat's throat. "Oh my God," she stuttered. She could not believe that this was her life. That only redoubled Joe's fit. Their combined mirth echoed through the thin motel walls for long moments, their joy at life starting to wash away the horrors they'd experienced. Their laughter slowly faded away. "We went head to head with the end of the world," Kat finally said after the world had righted itself. Joe sat up and considered her with narrowed eyes. "Yeah, we did," she slowly agreed. Her mouth cocked to one side in a good-humored smirk, and her head dipped in a decisive nod. A decision had been made. "So," Joe continued with forced nonchalance, "there's this werecat that I've been tracking up in Alabama. You want to come take care of it with me?" Delighted shock cut through Kat's chest. "Yes, of course," she immediately declared. This was the only logical course her life could take, college and a career fading into the nebulous dreams they always were. Joe slapped her hands onto her thighs and stood up. "Come on, then. We've got work to do." She held out her hand. Kat reached up and let Joe pull her to her feet. She'd finally come home. I hit the highway in a pink RV with stars on the ceiling. Live like a gypsy. Six strong hands on the steering wheel. I've been a long time gone now. Maybe someday I'm gonna settle down. But I've always found my way somehow by taking the long way. This is Baylor, and you've been listening to Finding Our Own Way, an anthology of supernatural fic by Lipton. You can find these and Lipton's other stories at liptonrm.livejournal.com. Thanks for listening.